The next year he goes up to Brooklyn, and he starts there as a first baseman instead of second baseman, his rookie of the year, and hits .297. Now the ball players, when we would look at Jackie Robinson in Montreal or in Brooklyn, we could not comprehend that he was able to perform so magnificently under such tremendous pressures. And he did. He was just very outstanding. He won the Most Valuable Player Award. He won the batting title in the National League. And I'm sure if he wanted to play, if he was able to play football, I know he would have been great in football, because if you would give him the ball, once he got that ball, nobody would be able to catch him, for the simple reason he's the only fella that we would marvel that he could get out of a rundown. Most of the time, the fellas, you take two or three dodges and then you give up, but he was able to get out of a rundown successfully more than anybody else that we've seen in baseball, and he was just an outstanding person to be able to accomplish what he had to do. It was just great.
Mr. Pope, coming on the American League side of things, could you give us some anecdotes about playing with Larry Doby?
I think that Larry was probably one of the strongest mentality type men that I know, because of his demeanor in dealing with his problems and with our problems in the American League. You would hardly know that there were any problems as far as Larry was concerned. We all didn't relate to problems the same way, but of course later I believe it had its effect on Larry, because if you read his book, you would understand that he was under tremendous pressure. No one knew that while he was playing, but he was under tremendous pressure, and although things were not perfect, they were still fairly good at that time. At least we were playing. Is it all right if I would like to make a statement? That I listened to George, and I wanted to say something about the Negro Leagues and about Jackie. George took in all respects, I know that it was kind of surprising to members of the opposite teams to see how the black ball players performed when they came to the big leagues. However, there should not be any surprise, because the black leagues produced some of the best ball players that I've ever seen. I played with them, and I played on both sides, and I must say that those guys, it's too bad that the American people didn't have the opportunity to see those guys play, where all of these myths would not be necessary, and where people would recognize an individual for the quality of baseball that he played at that time. I happened to room with Cool Papa Bell, and that was probably the best experience that I've ever had in baseball. But Jackie was an excellent ball player, and there were a number of ball players that I think were Jackie's equal in the Negro Leagues. However, I think that they selected the correct individual to do what he had to do, because there were not too many of us who could probably stand up and take all of the things that Jackie had to take. And I think that Mr. Rickey was very wise in his selection. I think he was very wise in the process that he followed to prepare Jackie for the big leagues. I don't think that there should be any surprises about how well these guys performed. I played a year and a half in the minor leagues and then came to the big leagues. And the irony of it all was that I could not I could not make the Homestead Grays team as a regular player. I couldn't. There were ball players there that had records that was a mile long, and when you talk about a guy like Cool Papa Bell, who was a consistent 400 hitter in the leagues, and when you talk about guys like Bankhead and Josh Gibson and the rest of those guys, when I went with the Grays, and when Mr. Posey was finally going to release me, he called me aside and indicated, well, I think that you're a good ball player and you're a good prospect and you're going to be a good ball player, but I want you to look out here and tell me who you're going to move. And that was the truth. There was nobody out there that I could move at that time. They had the outfield was outstanding. It was an outstanding. The other thing is that we played after the season baseball, we played a lot of professional baseball players. We played some of the all-stars, and I think that the guys performed and represented themselves very well in all of the postseason ball games that they played against big league ball players. So it kind of rings a bell when I know that it's true because no one knew about these things except they read the Negro tabloids and followed the game. So nobody knew about these guys. They might have known Josh Gibson because his name was up in everyone's mouth. And some of the other, but there were a lot of good ball players out there who never got the opportunity to be seen or heard with the big leagues. And I'm very thankful now that the opportunity did come. And as you see now, the talent that you see out there now is not just a talent that was developed over the last couple of years. That's been there for 45 years. It just did not have the opportunity to be exposed to the public.
You know, Dave, that's true that Jackie was not the most talented Negro baseball player. However, like you said, and I think I remarked that in my last sentence, he was chosen because he could handle what he was going to have to handle. And not only Mr. Ricky, but there was a couple of black sports writers in Pittsburgh that also were in that selection committee to bring Jackie. Now, Jackie had a great sense of humor, had a great smile, he was very articulate. In fact, we came into Cincinnati to play the Cincinnati Reds in 48, and as we walked into the clubhouse, there was about six or seven guys in the civilian clothing. We wondered what was going on. Well, they happened to be FBI guys. Jackie had received a threatening letter, and whenever he used to get those letters, he would put them up on the bulletin board. So we would read them, and it would start off by, "You black so-and-so, you get on the field today, we're going to shoot you." So we're all getting dressed, and Gene Hermaski, who had a great sense of humor, our outfielder, he's up there, and he reads the letter, and he turns to Jackie, who was putting on his clothes. He says, "Hey, Jack, you have nothing to worry about today." He says, "Well, what do you mean, Gene?" He says, "You wear number 42, don't you?" He says, "Yeah." He says, "Hell, we'll all put 42 on our back, and that guy won't know who to shoot." So Jackie's tugging on his socks, you know, and he says, "I don't know, Gene. I think you can still pick me out." But he had a great sense of humor. Yeah. If he didn't, he would have been in a straitjacket within 2 weeks at Montreal.
Absolutely. That's correct.
Peter? George, how would you explain the difference between the Yankees and the Dodgers in all of World Series between 47 and 55? Is it just a matter of luck or a little difference than trying to pitch here?
I heard you give your talk. You're very intelligent. You know doggone well, it was plain luck that they beat us. No, you know what it is. You know how you win championships? The other team beats themselves. That's how you win championships. And every team, the Yankees do the same thing. But when we would play the Yankees, they did not beat themselves. You had to beat them. They were the same way with us. It was just like a chess game. Everybody's making their move, and somebody makes a mistake, and that's the ball game. They had good pitching. They had good hitting. We had a good ballpark to hit in. Their ballpark was kind of long in left field, sort of neutralized our right-handed power. And when they would come into Ebbets Field, Gene Woodling, he'd hit one in center field stands. Russ Myers was pitching, and Mickey Mantle, batting left-handed, hit one in the upper deck in left center field. They just had a great ball club. But it was always nip and tuck, you know. They didn't exactly blow us away in four games. But they had good pitching and good baseball players, and we had the same thing. And Dave says sometimes that, you know, he couldn't get into the play regularly in the Negro Leagues, but he's got to remember that the guys that kept him on the bench had to be pretty damn good ball players. In fact, I feel the same way. I was like the fourth outfielder on the Dodgers, but I'd rather be the fourth outfielder on the Dodgers than playing regular for the Philadelphia Phillies and finishing 40 games out,
yeah,
rather than playing in the World Series.
George, just to follow up on that, what was it finally like in 55 after all those years of frustration to finally beat him?
Well, the guy that was the happiest, and we were happy for him too, was Pee Wee Reese, because he never won. He played in quite a few games against the Yankees in the World Series, and he was getting up in age. So guys like Jackie, who were all almost in their twilight of their career, were so happy to finally beat the Yankees. What's ironic, the next year the Dodgers also won in 56, and the Yankees beat them again. So if they wouldn't have won in 55, the Dodgers would never have won a World Series. In fact, Yogi Berra at a bat dinner just here in April, when they honored, it was Rizzuto and Pee Wee Reese were honored at the bat dinner. So Rizzuto gets up and he says to Pee Wee, you know, Pee Wee, he says, we used to beat you guys so much in the World Series that in 1955, after we heard that Mr. O'Malley was going to move the Dodgers to L.A., we figured we better let you guys win one so he'll keep the Dodgers in Brooklyn. He says, but you guys still left, he says. But we were very fortunate to beat them in 55, but they had great ball clubs.
Still again?
Mr. Pope mentioned Mr. Posey, and I know he was very influential. I wonder if you had any particular story or
Well, which one? There were two. There were two brothers. There was Com Posey and C. Posey. Com Posey had ceased his operations with the ball club when I joined him, but his brother was still there. I guess the most amusing thing about him was that he couldn't stay awake. We rode the buses all the time. You know, when you ride all night and play all day, you get sleepy. And C was always sleepy. And the players just used to play little tricks on him with the feathers and wake him up and things of that nature. But not too much. And I think that those guys were probably too busy talking baseball to do anything else. I never heard people that were in a business talk about their business as much as I did with these guys. That's all they did. We rode all night and they talked baseball all night. And we got up and played and jumped in the bus and rode again, and you heard baseball, baseball, baseball. I mentioned that I happened to room with Cool Papa Bell to listen to a gentleman like Cool Papa Bell talk about his experiences in baseball was an education in itself. It was just tremendous to hear the types of things that they did and the feats that they pulled. One of the other things that happened, of course, and that was that in the Negro Leagues had always had electrifying types of behavior on a ball field. Guys like Goose Tatum, and you probably heard of Goose Tatum. If you didn't, you saw him on the Globetrotters Ball Club. Well, the type of things that they did, their actions, it was just electrifying, that's all. The way they ran, the way they caught and threw and all that. I guess that a lot of times they call it hot dogging in the big leagues, but that was just a natural way of play. It was exciting.
Mike?
To follow up on something that Cole said a bit ago, you were talking about players that you played with who never were well known. And I was wondering to all the gentlemen if there was one player that you either played with or played against who you felt never ever got the recognition that they deserved.
That's for any of you three or all of you three. Is there one player that you guys played with that you thought was extremely underrated?
I have a gentleman here in Cleveland who was a pitcher for the Cleveland Indians for years, and long before my career began here, and I got to know him very well, and I think that he's been bypassed from the Hall of Fame for years and years by the name of Mel Harder. And I think that, that's one of the guys that really did not get what he deserved in baseball.
George?
Well, the fellow would be Carl Furillo, who played right field for us. He finished with close to 300 batting average. But we had so many outstanding players on that ball club, and Carl wasn't as articulate as the other fellows, and of course he didn't get as much press, but he was outstanding. I'll never forget. Yeah, he got beamed, and they carried him off the field, and the next day Charlie Gressel says, "We're going to rest you for a few days." Well, we start the game, and it goes into extra innings. About the 10th or 11th inning, who's in right field for defensive purposes is Carl Furillo. The next day he's playing in the lineup again. But he was a very outstanding. He was a hard-nosed ball player and an outstanding right fielder, a great arm, and a very good, consistent hitter.
Danny, is there anybody that you can pick up?
Well, Stan Spence over at Washington was a pretty darn good player. He almost killed the St. Louis Browns by himself. Steve, I'd like to say something about that he didn't mention too much about the Negro Leagues. They didn't play under ideal conditions.
Okay, get in the back.
First question is for Dave Pope. Dave, did you play with the Homestead Rays in 1947 when they came down to Gaddis, Ohio for the first time? Do you remember that?
No,
were you playing with them that year?
No, I was not with them that year. I went, in fact, I was only with them maybe half or three quarters of the season. When they had to cut back, then I was one of the first guys to go. And from that point, I went with the Pittsburgh Croppers, which at that time was the United States League, which also was developed and organized by Branch Rickey. No, I wasn't with them in 47.
Steve, did you have a question? Fred?
Mr. Galehouse, I know it's over 60 years ago, but there have been two books this year written about Walter Johnson. And in the introduction, it indicated that you played for Walter Johnson when he was managing Cleveland. Specific question, did he teach you anything about pitching? Or, and another question, do you have any memories of him as a manager?
I was only there about a half a year. And like so many excellent players, it was hard for him to relate to those of us who weren't quite as good as he was. And but he talked about how to pitch in this, but I was only there a couple months until I was farmed out. So, but I was surprised, never having seen him pitch, I was surprised that he was not an overhander three-quarters pitcher. He was down from the side.
James.
This is for Mr. Heaton. I wonder if you could comment on and compare what's happening with the community today in the Indians with 54, and whether there's the same level of Indians mania and fan support in as much as teams are comparable in terms of their performance and attendance and that sort of thing.
I think there's more interest today in the Indians than there was in 54. In 54, it was like this season. They won a lot of games. But it seems to me that it was too close to the 48 season they'd won, you know, in 48. So I think the town is more up for this series and for what this team is doing than it was for 54. But I think the system of players is different now than it used to be. The players used to get comparable salaries to the sports writers.
And if a sports writer, if you wanted to, took somebody out to buy him a sandwich, you were a good guy, you know. And they enjoyed that. But now, if you want to take a quarterback out, a $1 million quarterback, and want to buy him a dinner, it doesn't make any difference to him whether he goes or not. So I think the players were friendlier and better and easier to get along with in those older days than they certainly are now.
I've got a question for George.
Yes.
Carl Furillo, you're talking about him. He was, I don't remember all the particulars, but he was hit. Might have been Brooklyn, and it must have been the Giants. And he was hit with a pitch and went down to first base, and on the next pitch he decided to run into the dugout and fight Leo DeRocher. Tell us about that one.
That's right. He got hit in the Polo Grounds. He goes down to first base. He looks into the Giants' dugout, and he points to Leo and says, "You're the one that's telling him to throw at me. And I'm going to get you." And Leo says, "Come on." And Furillo went after him. And the fellow sort of made a little ring, but DeRocher skidded out of there. A couple of guys grabbed Furillo from the Giants, and the fight was over because if they would have went at it, DeRocher, you know, Leo was no match for him. And somebody stepped on his hand and fractured his little finger, and he didn't play the rest of the year, maybe a couple of weeks. And he led the league in hitting that year, and then he played in the World Series.
Peter?
For all four of you, forgetting for the moment about the issue of player salaries, just as far as the game itself as it's played on the field, could each of you comment on the one thing that either disturbs you or disappoints you the most about baseball as you see it today compared to the game you knew in the 30s, 40s, and 50s?
Questions for all four, so whoever likes to jump in.
Well, the thing when I'm watching TV, and I find it very amusing, I can't understand why they're all wearing the gold chains, you know. The guy's running, and he's got a couple of crosses on, and it's bouncing like Barrega or that second baseman. He's got a cup. I think they're trying to say that we're making a lot of money, but of course my son, who doesn't make much money, he also has a small gold chain. But in fact, he keeps borrowing money from me. But anyhow, I can't understand why they can't have the commissioner. Years ago, when they would talk to us, they said, "We can't do that, the commissioner." We thought they were talking about God, you know, the commissioner. "We can't talk about trading you to this, that's tampering," and all that kind of stuff. But we knew what was going on, but we couldn't do anything about it. So, you know, they're holding a gun at you, at your head, and you know you're right, but you better not say nothing because they're liable to send you to minors. But anyhow, that's one thing. The other thing is what I can understand, and I don't know why they don't wise up on it. The ball is hit, and it's about 40 rows up in the stands, and this outfielder goes back, and he jumps up on a fence and could injure himself and ruin his career. Now, if he's a major league outfielder, he should be able to judge that he has no chance whatsoever for that ball, and he should stop. I mean, why run into the fence and ruin a career where you might be making $2 million for the next 5 years? Now, somebody should, I imagine the coaches must talk to them, but it's like your children, you know, 17-year-old children. You tell them something and don't drive fast. The next day you're burying them because it's hard. It's frightening when you're a parent. I found that after I got married. I thought baseball was a tough game until I got married. But all my kids start driving at the same time. I had three kids, and they all were all driving at the same time. I called my brother up. I said, "Ed," I said, "I think there's something wrong with me." He said, "What's the matter?" I said, "I don't know. I just don't feel right." He said, "I feel sort of nervous." He said, "Well, you know, you got to tell me what's wrong. Maybe I can help you." I says, "You know, when the kids go out with the car, I feel so helpless." He said, "Join the club." That was my first experience with kids driving. But the guys nowadays, and you know, I can't comprehend, and these fellows can't. Maybe that's why they don't even want to comment on it. You have what they call a no-trade contract. They cannot trade you. Then they have a no-cut contract, you know, and they have a contract for 4 years, and then somebody will get a bonus like that Deion Sanders, $12 million. Real quick story. We're at a reunion, the Dodgers, in Vero Beach. Peter O'Malley brought us all back, the wives. We're having a little banquet. Buzzy Bavese gets up, who was our general manager. He's retired now, later on became manager of the California Angels. He gets up and he says, we're all sitting in the audience, you know, fellas, we have four guys on the California Angels this year, and each one of them is making more than the whole Dodger team did in 1955 when you guys won the championship. So Peter Reese got up, and he looked at him. He says, you know, that's very nice, Buzzy. He says, but if you weren't so damn cheap, that wouldn't have happened. But it's unreal, and the players have free agency. Somebody's mentioned, I think, this fellow here reminds me of Bill Murray, the comedian, but I think he's the one that mentioned something about, or somebody did, about the players going to free agency and getting a lot of money to sign. Well, that's a lot better that way than the players being traded by the club owners to some other club owner and getting the money and not giving us any. I mean, you know, it's got to hit a happy medium, and that's the problem. They are not hitting a happy medium. They have so much money, they don't know what to do with it except to fight over it. That's what's happening today. They're fighting over all that money. So that's a sad fact. And Tom Aiken said there, baseball is a beautiful game. As a youngster, I used to dream, I could not comprehend that they would pay me money to play baseball. But everything is getting out of whack. In fact, not only baseball, the whole world has got problems. But that's how it is. So that's the only game in town. So you got to try to get by as best as you can. But there are some crazy things in baseball, which we want to keep it on a lighter plane. But those were the two things. The chains, nobody can tell them to take them off. Johnny Allen, somebody probably remember, he cut his sleeve. Denny, remember? Yeah. He cut his sleeve. He had a white shirt on so the batter would be distracted. They held up the game, made him take it off. Today you can't do that.